But they were in 23, and just the difference, they came back.
Now, why would one year have been like that and the other so different?
Women smoked in England.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get returned men in 21, 22. Got a lot of returned men. And the returned people were coming back. And women were smoking in England. No, it was the influence of people returned and so on that 21, we were still the old guard.
Mm-hmm.
And 23, now you see, as I say, we thought there were a lot, you see, the 21 thought there were a lot. So that was Sally Creighton's. So Sally, she was brilliant in English.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this very Irish wit. And as I said, the men were scared of her. They were scared to have too much. They were intrigued by her, you know, and they wanted to know her and do things. But then they never knew when she was going to get the better of them. So anyway, so but with her clever... Now, Anne Angus, you know, she was a different type. But Anne had a very good mind. Her mind only started to go last year. She and I were supposed to go to a factory women's club thing celebrating their 70th anniversary and tell something about the early days. And I thought I could, although I wouldn't have in the end. And we were picking Anne up, and they'd arranged it all. And it's only then we begin to realize that Anne's memory was going.
Oh.
No, I haven't talked to her.
Yeah.
That she forgot they had made the arrangements. And 4 o'clock they'd phoned her and said, we're picking you up and so on. They got there, she wasn't dressed. They'd forgotten all about it.
Oh.
Now, that must have come on fairly suddenly because when they had talked to her earlier about her making the arrangements, nobody had suspected any loss of memory, you know. But it must have come on fairly suddenly. So, and Angus, so I know. Oh, I remember that. I remember when you never thought of it. See, I remember that when you mentioned it, and this. This evening music, maybe once a year they had the music thing, and yeah, the Christmas party. Now how long that? And that wasn't a Christmas party that these things that Shrum emceed.
Was Shrum funny? Was he, people like to have him MC because he was amusing or?
Made it go.
You made it go.
No, it wasn't necessarily funny. Oh no, but he made it go. You see, there were two Shrums, more than one Shrums. Now, I never knew the other Shrum that people hated. The people had anything to do with him in the army hated Shrum. I didn't know him. No, I didn't know that kind of Shrum. I have a cousin, they come and take me. He lives in West Vancouver. Do you know anything about the Arts Club Theatre?
Oh, well, I've gone to some of their performances, yes.
Oh, well, you know who Bill Millard is then, probably.
Yes, I know who he is, but I haven't met him personally, no.
Well, he's my cousin. This is, his mother comes, they come every 2 weeks to get me. But she started the university, she's 12 years younger than I am. She started the university, wanted to take home economics,
mm-hmm.
and there was no home economics. So, but they didn't tell them that when they registered. So they shouted, a few of them, into some science courses, and one of them was Shrums. And she said, those poor girls, Shrum knew, well, of course, the girls weren't interested in his physics. And who the, he knew they weren't interested. So they said they put in an awful year because Shrum didn't want them there. And he would come in and to start with and ask a question, something that he knew darn well they didn't know because they didn't work at it very hard. Then he immediately asked one of the bright boys. So their recollection of Shrum is quite different, you see.
I'm sure.
So that it all depended. I haven't that read. No, Shrum could be fun, you know. He's been here at parties. I remember this Murray from London, the Vancouver Hospital. I might take down 2 weeks.
Brought him out.
They had an epidemic of Staphylococcus, and brought him out to try and. Now Blythe knew him, you see, and I've forgotten how, but anyway. And he wanted to get a hold of him, phoned the hospital, and said, oh, you can't possibly talk to him. And he said, Blythe said, well, you tell him who's talking. So then, so Marie phones back. So he said, oh, we'll have a party for you. And we had a party, and Shrum was here, and we decided we were going to make this chap. Blythe had just been made from this band over there, Big Chief White Feather. And so the party said, I don't know who all were here, and Gordon Shrum was here. We're going to make him an Indian chief. So I got a blanket, and I think I started it. I must have been at something, some of these Indian war dances, you know, the beat of them, you know. And we put a rug on him and made him Big Chief Little Berries. And in throwing out some of Bly's stuff not long ago, here was a letter from London addressed to Big White Feather from Little Berries. And here he was all decked up and Shrum, you see, and everybody danced the Indian dance. And now Shrum, you see, no, Shrum was fun. He'd get right in on those things. And I didn't know the other kind of Shrum. Mm-hmm. So, oh yes, he was good at these things. I don't know how long. So I don't know what they do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to go back to when you were at UBC, and you were in the Faculty of Science, and is that you went from King Edward High School then to, or I guess it was the Faculty of Arts and Science was part of it?
It was very definitely part of science. Well, that was another story. I liked, in high school, if I had algebra to do, we had anything. Now we took geometry. We called it Euclid.
Oh, yeah.
If we had problems to do, mm-hmm. I would do them always before I did my Latin. Mm-hmm. And I loved doing them. And I remember, now this geometry, it was one long thing, you see. And with Billy Woods, his professor, and most of the students in the class didn't like that. And they couldn't do it. So they would say, now will you explain this to them? So he'd explain it. And I held up my hand and I said, I didn't do it that different that way. Do you mind if I show you where I went wrong? So I did, and he looked at me and he said, it's not wrong, it's right. So every time the doggone students would say, please tell us how to do this, then he'd forget. And I'd have to tell him over again. It was only one thing, mind you. But the annual said, the thing they wrote about me, that I was a master at cutting down geometry proofs. Because this happened so often, so it was only once I say one thing. So that's what I liked. So I naturally, I took chemistry. We had good professors. In those days, you didn't have junior people giving the lectures. Dr. Clark, Dr. Archibald, Dr. McIntosh. You won't know Dr. McIntosh. You won't have run into him. He went back into industry, I think. Mm-hmm. And of course, Dr. Archibald, he was a wonderful man. He was head of chemistry. He'd come along, and you got doing advanced organic or something, you know. Maybe you're doing it all wrong. He'd come along and say, now, what are you doing? And you'd tell him, very good, very good. Now, just let me think. Maybe if you tried it this way. you just might help, you see. Yeah. It's probably all wrong. Yeah. And these were all senior professors that we had. And then Chem 2, which is analytic analysis. No, I loved chemistry. And so I took all the courses except industrial chemistry.
And would you be one of the few women in the class, or were there quite a few women also besides you?
No. There were two of us that took him. Now, Ruth Fulton, who did she marry? She was in 19 and had done chemistry, and she was instructing. There were only two that took all through, but there were some of the people, the Wilson girls, Frieda Wilson, who was majoring in bacteriology, were required to take some chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I remember in Chem 5, that was advanced analytical, there were four of us. We had our desks side by side. There were four girls taking it. I remember we had to do a coal analysis. And I guess I was the first. He designed these little groups. They all had to do it, but they did it in different order. I guess I was the first one that did coal. And you had to go and get your coal at home and get a little bunch of it. And then you had to break it up, then sieve it, and finally fine for analysis. And it was pretty hard to not to get this coal over your face and so on. And I became a joke. And these science boys, applied science, now they took chemistry with us in those days. They looked down on the arts people a little bit, but we had to take chemistry with them. And I remember them being, oh yes, I remember them kidding me in the kind of my face, because you this darn small stuff. And I gave Archie my results, and then these darn boys would, they'd come and ask me what results I got. I didn't know it a long time afterwards. And then Archie said, it was jingle pot coal, that's what we used. And Archie said, it's amazing how many people are using jingle pot coal. And these darn science boys would say, what results did you get? And I thought, well, you're not interested in my call. It was a long time afterwards. I found out that whole darn lot of them, because there's only a little bit, had stolen my coal. So this is why they got interested. This is why they got interested in this. That was advanced chemistry. Then I took a master's.
And was that at UBC? Did UBC offer a master's then?
Yeah, no PhDs.
Yeah.
PhDs didn't come in until early 50s, I think. Yeah. I was reading not long ago that one of the first PhDs was this lad from India in agriculture, Menon, that they gave a PhD. It was one of the, if not the first, it was one of the first. It was given at UBC. Mm-hmm. It took a master's. And then I applied for a scholarship at Toronto. They called them open fellowships, I think, if I remember right. Any department you, it wasn't science, I think it was just, I think they were open. And I elected to go into biochemistry, which was done in the Faculty of Medicine, you see, because I liked chemistry. And so that's how I went to Toronto, fellowship. That lasted 2 years, and then you did what we call demonstrating, you know. And what a difference. The first day you went in with one of these labs, these were all medical students, and this would be the first day they had to take biochemistry. And the first thing we started at was sugars. And the first bit of chemistry of sugars, well, it was like, I don't know whether you know any chemistry, aldehydes and ketones. Mm-hmm. And you would say to them, you remember those basic reactions of aldehydes and ketones. If they looked blank at you, you'd say, oh, you took your chemistry in Toronto, eh? Because the Toronto...
Here, I've got it.
Oh, I've got things all right around, but I haven't got a jacket on. The Toronto biochemistry, the chemistry people, now that's not true of meds now, but the chemistry people always look down on the meds. Mm-hmm. I had to take some chemistry over there. I don't know why, but they told me I had to. And they'd say, now suppose we're making up a solution that didn't have to be accurate. Oh, let's suppose it's for the meds. This is for their attitude. So the meds reacted, so they learned as little as they could, you see. Mm-hmm. So by fall, they didn't remember any organic chemistry. If they said, they looked at you and they said, oh yes, I said, where are you from? UBC.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
They were grads from here.
Yeah.
And if you had taken chemistry from here, you doggone learned your organic chemistry and knew the reason why. Mm-hmm. Dr. R.H. Clark, he started early in the fall, and oh, I remember this so well. And they give you an exam. You don't need to have, maybe it'd been 6 weeks. And I didn't know organic chemistry was supposed to be hard for some reason. Nobody told me. I remember this weekend, and I couldn't remember this stuff. I got so mad. I don't know. And I worked at it. And I had done pretty well in first year chemistry. And I got a 70, and I thought, that's not very good. And some of these boys, I remember Clark giving me their papers to turn back, to give them back, and I looked at them, and some of them got 10. And I said, what's the big idea? Well, they knew it was supposed to be hard, so they didn't get mad. And Clark would, he'd have another exam. By the time you ended your year, you failed so many times, you finally got through. His theory was you'd learn for an exam, but maybe you didn't make a passing mark, but the next time you'd make a bit more. So doggone it, by the time you passed your chemistry, you remembered it.
You knew it.
So if a student said he knew anything about ketones and aldehydes, right off the bat, I knew. UBC, sure enough, yeah, they're the only ones that. So that's how I got into chemistry.
And then when you came back to UBC, you talked, I saw that you were one of eight people teaching under Dr. Hutchinson. Was a beginning course on physiology, I think it was.
No, I don't think I taught under that. I might have done demonstrating.
Or maybe it was demonstrating. Did you teach at all at UBC?
No. No. Came back in 29. No, I didn't do. Now Ruth Brink did, of course. Mm-hmm. And we were married at 30, and then this darn depression came along, you see. Mm-hmm. And
how did you meet your husband? Was it here at UBC, or was it in Toronto, or?
Both.
Where did you first meet him?
Well, in the big lab, the Chem 2 people, which is not first year chemistry, analytical chemistry, they had the big part of the room, and then the advanced group, we just had one side of it, so we didn't really know these boys. But we knew them just a little bit. Then, in fourth year, Blythe, Eagles, and Jimmy Daphne worked with Dr. Clark on digitalis. That was the early days they tested their stuff out. What do they get? Heart, you know. What do they give for a heart? Digitalis.
Mm-hmm.
Getting digitalis. But they tried them out on cats. And these boys, they used to come from Westminster, and they always wanted cats, and if anybody ever said they had an old cat they wanted to get rid of, they used to come and get it. And I remember that my grandmother lived with us, and we had an old cat, and my mother said, "You tell the cat boys to come and get the cat," and they did. Now that goes back to university. Then we all went to Toronto. Jimmy came into biochemistry, and Blythe came into pathchem. Neither of them did masters at UBC. Well, I was a year ahead of them. I was in 21, and they were 22. And I don't know which ones did. Anyway, they went to Toronto. Jimmy went, and so Jimmy was in, he was in biochemistry when I went there. So we were both graduate students there. And then I got in with a bunch of girls that I got with a Dr. Mary Tom. She was graduating medicine, and she was working with the people in anatomy. And they went to the Dean of Graduate Studies, I think, and I guess I'd registered, and this woman knew I was staying with an ancient aunt or something. And they went to this woman and said, "We're looking for somebody to fill out an apartment," and she thought of me. And anyway, that's how I come to go and lived with them. With these girls.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine from here, who's with Apple Cube, so on, used to live in our cottage, went east just at Christmas times to work for Apple Computers.
Oh.
And got an apartment in Rosedale.
Uh-huh.
And which in my day was Shaughnessy Poshdale, posh thing. But it has been subdivided because she lives on the third floor.
Mm-hmm.
And she had written me and said, you know, and I wrote back and said, well, I didn't live far from there. I lived on 101 Gloucester Street. And in those days, it had gone down. But Sir Henry Mulock, who was the postmaster, and he was Chancellor of the University of Toronto, lived right opposite. And he still had the big house with a fence all around it. And on Sherburn Street, just going down our street and along, here were the Masseys. If you ever read the memoirs of the Masseys, when they moved to Toronto, the parents of Vincy Massey and the son, and they would just, they didn't, well, those are before cars, they're lovely horses and so on, you know, and so on. And so they just lived around the corner, in the memoirs, you see. So I wrote back and said, oh, I once lived in a pre-Rosedale area, but it was a short distance from the red light district. And it used to be a joke. Coming from UBC, and UBC built in a residential area, we weren't used to any red light district. And university was just off college, and you walked down in the daylight, somebody would, you know, some of these boys would sail out to you, and you thought it was somebody, you'd look, and pretty soon you learned, you know, what that was about. But I used to work at nights, and it used to be a joke. Somebody would always try to pick you up. But as long as you said no thank you, nobody bothered you, you see. But you were just close enough to this district that they sort of thought maybe you were up there. That's,
yeah.
That was, so it used to be a joke. So I lived in Toronto, and these girls were just recent enough graduates that they knew. We used to have great afternoon teas, and that was an open house where people dropped in, and a lot of the boys from out of town that were lonely would drop in. Yeah, there were quite a few UBC boys dropped in.
So is that when your husband?
Oh,
that's
well,
when you
he
met
was
him there?
One of the amongst the ones that sort of. I don't know. I guess it just drifted.
Yeah.
They're friends, it would be quite a bit boys that didn't have any local friends.
Mm-hmm.
They would drop in Sunday afternoons. So, that's the beginning.
That's the beginning, that's right. And your maiden name is Dunbar?
Dunbar.
So is that any relation to Dunbar, the Dunbar area of Vancouver?
I think so. Well, my family came out here. No, I better not say too much. I had an uncle who came out about 1910 as a dentist. People were moving from the West out here. You see, the West was booming.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was a teacher living in London, and he persuaded my father everything was hunky-dory out here.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out, and he bought property on Dunbar Street. And then the bottom fell out, and everybody lost money. You know this money. So I'm not sure about this Dunbar business. He had bought houses on Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I don't think it was named, I can't recollect that it was named after any special person, but I won't be too sure.
Yeah.
But they were in 23, and just the difference, they came back.
Now, why would one year have been like that and the other so different?
Women smoked in England.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get returned men in 21, 22. Got a lot of returned men. And the returned people were coming back. And women were smoking in England. No, it was the influence of people returned and so on that 21, we were still the old guard.
Mm-hmm.
And 21, 23, now you see, as I say, we thought there were a lot, you see, the 21s thought there were a lot. So that was Sally Creighton's. So Sally, she was brilliant in English.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this very Irish wit, and as I said, the men were scared of her. They were scared to have too much. They were intrigued by her, you know, and they wanted to know her and do things. But then they never knew when she was going to get the better of them. So anyway, so but with her clever now Anne Angus, you know, she was a different type. But Anne had a very good mind. Her mind only started to go last year. She and I were supposed to go to a factory women's club thing celebrating their 70th anniversary and tell something about the early days. And I thought I could, although I wouldn't have in the end. And we were picking Anne up, and they'd arranged it all. And it's only then we begin to realize that Anne's memory was going.
Oh.
No, I haven't talked to her.
Yeah.
That she forgot. They had made the arrangements, and 4 o'clock they'd phoned her and said, "We're picking you up," and so on. They got there, she wasn't dressed, had forgotten all about it.
Oh.
Now, that must have come on fairly suddenly, because when they had talked to her earlier about her making the arrangements, nobody had suspected any loss of memory, you know. But it must have come on fairly suddenly. So, and Angus, so I know. Oh, I remember that. I remember when you never thought of it. See, I remember that when you mentioned it, and this. Oh yes, this. This evening music, maybe once a year they had the music thing, and yeah, the Christmas party. Now how long that, and that wasn't a Christmas party that these things that Shrum emceed.
Was Shrum funny? Was he, people like to have him MC because he was amusing, or?
Made it go.
You made it go.
No, it wasn't necessarily funny. Oh no, but he made it go. You see, there were two Shrums, more than one Shrums. Now, I never knew the other Shrum that people hated. The people had anything to do with him in the army hated Shrum. I didn't know him. No, I didn't know that kind of Shrum. I have a cousin, they come and take me. He lives in West Vancouver. Do you know anything about the Arts Club Theatre?
Oh, well, I've gone to some of their performances, yes.
Oh, well, you know who Bill Millard is then, probably.
Yes, I know who he is, but I haven't met him personally, no.
Well, he's my cousin. This is, his mother comes, they come every 2 weeks to get me. But she started the university. She's 12 years younger than I. She started the university, wanted to take home economics. Mm-hmm. And there was no home economics. But they didn't tell them that when they registered. So they shoved a few of them into some science courses, and one of them was Shrums. And she said, those poor girls. Shrum knew, well, of course, the girls weren't interested in his physics. And he knew they weren't interested. So as they said they put in an awful year because Shrum didn't want them there. And he would come in and to start with and ask a question, something that he knew darn well they didn't know because they didn't work at it very hard. Then he immediately asked one of the bright boys. So their recollection of Shrum, yeah, is quite different, you see.
I'm sure.
So that it all depended. I haven't that read. No, Shrum could be fun, you know. He's been here at parties. I remember this Murray from London, the Vancouver Hospital. I might take down two in your time.
Brought him out.
They had a epidemic of staphylococcus, and brought him out to try and. Now Blythe knew him, you see, and I've forgotten how, but anyway. And he wanted to get a hold of him, phoned the hospital, and said, you can't possibly talk to him. And he said, Blythe said, well, you tell him who's talking. So then, so Marie phones back. So he said, we'll have a party for you. And we had a party, and Shrum was here, and we decided we were going to make this chap. Blythe had just been made from this band over there, Big Chief White Feather. And so the party said, I don't know who all were here, and Gordon Shrum was here. We're going to make him an Indian chief. So I got a blanket, and I think I started it. I must have been at something, some of these Indian war dances, you know, the beat of them, you know. And we put a rug on him and made him Big Chief Little Berries. And in throwing out some of Lye's stuff not long ago, here was a letter from London addressed to Big White Feather from Little Berries. And here he was all decked up and Shrum, you see, and everybody danced the Indian dance. And now Shrum, you see, no, Shrum was fun. He'd get right in on those things. And I didn't know the other kind of Shrum. Mm-hmm. So, yes, he was good at these things. I don't know how long. So I don't know what they do now.
Yeah, I don't know. Just to go back to when you were at UBC, and you were in the faculty of science, and is that you went from King Edward High School then to, or I guess it was the Faculty of Arts and Science was part of it.
It was very definitely part of science. Well, that was another story. I liked, in high school, if I had algebra to do, if we had anything, now we took geometry, we called it Euclid.
Oh, yeah.
If we had problems to do, mm-hmm. I would do them always before I did my Latin. Mm-hmm. And I loved doing them. And I remember, now this geometry, there was one long thing, you see, and with Billy Woods, his professor, and most of the students in the class didn't like that, and they couldn't do it. So they would say, now will you explain this to them? So he'd explain it. And I held up my hand and I said, I didn't do it that different that way. Do you mind if I show you where I went wrong? So I did, and he looked at me and he said, it's not wrong, it's right. So every time the doggone students would say, please tell us how to do this, then he'd forget. And I'd have to tell him over again. It was only one thing, mind you. But the annual said, the thing they wrote about me, that I was a master at cutting down geometry proofs, because this happened so often, so it was only once I say one thing. So that's what I liked. So I naturally, I took chemistry. We had good professors. In those days, you didn't have junior people giving lectures. Dr. Clark, Dr. Archibald, Dr. McIntosh. You won't know Dr. McIntosh. You won't have run into him. He went back into industry, I think. Mm-hmm. And of course, Dr. Archibald, he was a wonderful man. He was head of chemistry. He'd come along, and you got doing advanced organic or something, you know. Maybe you're doing it all wrong. He'd come along and say, now, what are you doing? And you'd tell him, very good, very good. Now, just let me think. Maybe if you tried it this way. you just might help, you see. Yeah. It's probably all wrong. Yeah. And these were all senior professors that we had. And then Chem 2, which is analytic analysis. No, I left chemistry. And so I took all the courses except industrial chemistry.
Now, would you have been one of the few women in the class, or were there quite a few women also besides you?
No. There were two of us that took him. Now, Ruth Fulton, who did she marry? She was in 19 and had done chemistry, and she was instructing. There were only two that took all through, but there were some of the people, the Wilson girls, Frieda Wilson, who was majoring in bacteriology, were required to take some chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I remember in Chem 5, that was advanced analytical, there were four of us. We had our desks side by side. There were four girls taking it. I remember we had to do a coal analysis. And I guess I was the first. He designed these little groups. They all had to do it, but they did it in different order. And I guess I was the first one that did coal. And you had to go and get your coal at home and get a little bunch of it. And then you had to break it up, then sieve it, and finally fine for analysis. And it was pretty hard to not to get this coal over your face and so on. And I became a joke. And these science boys, applied science, now they took chemistry with us in those days. They looked down on the arts people a little bit, but we had to take chemistry with them. And I remember them being, oh yes, I remember them kidding me in account of my face, because you had this darn small stuff. And I gave Archie my results, and then these darn boys would, they'd come and ask me what results I got. I didn't know till a long time afterwards And then Archie said, it was Jingle Pot Cola, that's what we used. And Archie said, it's amazing how many people are using Jingle Pot Cola. And these darn science boys would say, what results did you get? And I thought, well, you're not interested in my cola. It was a long time afterwards, I found out that whole darn lot of them, because it was only a little bit, had stolen my cola. So this is why they got interested. This is why they got interested in this. That was advanced chemistry. Then I took a master's.
And was that at UBC? Did UBC offer a master's then?
Yeah, no PhDs.
Yeah.
PhDs didn't come in until early 50s, I think.
Yeah.
I was reading not long ago that one of the first PhDs was this lad from India in agriculture, Menon, that they gave a PhD. It was one of the, if not the first, it was one of the first. It was given at UBC.
Mm-hmm.
It took a master's. And then I applied for a scholarship at Toronto. They called them open fellowships, I think, if I remember right. Any department you were, it wasn't science, I think it was just, I think they were open. And I elected to go into biochemistry, which was done in the Faculty of Medicine, you see, because I liked chemistry. And so that's how I went to Toronto, fellowship. That lasted 2 years, and then you did what we call demonstrating, you know. And what a difference. The first day you went in one of these labs, these were all medical students, and this would be the first day they had to take biochemistry. And the first thing we started at was sugars. And the first bit of chemistry of sugars, well, it was like, I don't know whether you know any chemistry, aldehydes and ketones.
Mm-hmm.
And you would say to them, you remember those basic reactions of aldehydes and ketones. If they looked blank at you, you'd say, oh, you took your chemistry in Toronto, eh? Because the Toronto.
Here, I've got it.
Oh, I've got things all right around, but I haven't got a jacket on. The Toronto biochemistry, the chemistry people. Now that's not true of meds now, but the chemistry people always look down on the meds.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take some chemistry over there. I don't know why, but they told me I had to. And they'd say, now suppose we're making up a solution that didn't have to be accurate. Oh, let's suppose it's for the meds. This is for their attitude. So the meds reacted, so they learned as little as they could, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So by fall, they didn't remember any organic chemistry. If they said, they looked at you and they said, oh yes, I said, where are you from? UBC.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
They were grads from here.
Yeah.
And if you had taken chemistry from here, you doggone learned your organic chemistry and knew the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. R. H. Clark, he started early in the fall, and I remember this so well. And he'd give you an exam. You know, you had maybe it'd been 6 weeks. And I didn't know organic chemistry was supposed to be hard for some reason. Nobody told me. I remember this weekend, and I couldn't remember this stuff. I got so mad. I don't know. And I worked at it. And I had done pretty well in first year chemistry. And I got a 70, and I thought, that's not very good. And some of these boys, I remember Clark giving me their papers to turn back, to give them back, and I looked at them. And some of them got 10. And I said, what's the big idea? Well, they knew it was supposed to be hard, so they didn't get mad. And Clark would, he'd have another exam. By the time you ended your year, you failed so many times, you finally got through. his theory was you'd learn for an exam, but you, maybe you didn't make a passing mark, but the next time you'd make a bit more. So doggone it, by the time you passed your chemistry, you remembered it.
You knew it.
So if a student said he knew anything about ketones and aldehydes, right off the bat, I knew. UBC, sure enough, yeah, they're the only ones that. So that's how I got into chemistry.
And then when you came back to UBC, you talked, I saw that you were one of 8 people teaching under Dr. Hutchinson. Was a beginning course on physiology, I think it was.
No, I don't think I taught under that. I might have done demonstrating.
Or maybe it was demonstrating. Did you teach at all at UBC?
No. No, came back in 29. No, I didn't do. Now Ruth Brink did, of course. Mm-hmm. And we were married at 30, and then this darn depression came along, you see. Mm-hmm. And
how did you meet your husband? Was it here at UBC or was it in Toronto or?
Both.
Where did you first meet him?
Well, in the big lab, the Chem 2 people, which is not first year chemistry, analytical chemistry, they had the big part of the room, and then the advanced group, we just had one side of it, so we didn't really know these boys. But we knew them just a little bit. Then in fourth year, Blythe, Eagles, and Jimmy Daphne worked with Dr. Clark on digitalis. That was the early days they tested their stuff out. What do they get? Heart, you know. What do they give for a heart? Digitalis.
Mm-hmm.
Getting digitalis. But they tried them out on cats. And these boys, they used to come from Westminster, and they always wanted cats, and if anybody ever said they had an old cat they wanted to get rid of, they used to come and get it. And I remember that my grandmother lived with us, and we had an old cat, and my mother said, "You tell the cat boys to come and get the cat," and they did. Now that goes back to university. Then we all went to Toronto. Jimmy came into biochemistry, and Blythe came into pathchem. Neither of them did masters at UBC. Well, I was a year ahead of them. I was in 21, and they were 22. And I don't know which ones did. Anyway, they went to Toronto. Jimmy went, and so Jimmy was in, he was in biochemistry when I went there. So we were both graduate students there. And then I I got in with a bunch of girls that I got with a Dr. Mary Tom. She was graduating medicine, and she was working with the people in anatomy. And they went to the Dean of Graduate Studies, I think, and I guess I'd registered, and this woman knew I was staying with an ancient aunt or something. And they went to this woman and said, "We're looking for somebody to fill out an apartment," and she thought of me. And anyway, that's how I come to go and lived with them, with these girls. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine from here, who's with Apple Cucumber and so on, she used to live in our cottage, went east just at Christmas times to work for Apple Computers.
Oh.
And got an apartment in Rosedale. Mm-hmm. And which in my day was Shaughnessy Poshdale, mm-hmm. posh
yeah.
thing. But it has been subdivided because she lives on the third floor. Mm-hmm. And she had written me and said, you know, and I wrote back and said, well, I didn't live far from there. I lived on 101 Gloucester Street. And in those days, it had gone down. But Sir Henry Mulock, who was the at one time the postmaster, and he was Chancellor of the University of Toronto, lived right opposite. And he still had the big house with a fence all around it. And on Sherbourne Street, just you went down our street and along, you were the Masseys. If you ever read the memoirs of the Masseys, when they moved to Toronto, the parents of Vincy Massey and the son, and they would just, they didn't, well, those are before cars, their lovely horses and so on, you know, and so on. And so they just lived around the corner, in the memoirs, you see. So I wrote back and said, oh, I once lived in a pre-Rosedale area, but it was a short distance from the red light district, and it used to be a joke. Coming from UBC, and UBC built in a residential area, we weren't used to any red light district, and university was just off college, and you walked down in the daylight, somebody would, you know, some of these boys would sail out to you. And you thought it was somebody you'd look, and pretty soon you learned, you know, what that was about. But I used to work at nights, and it used to be a joke. Somebody would always try to pick you up. But as long as you said no thank you, nobody bothered you, you see. But you were just close enough to this district that they sort of thought maybe you were up there. That's,
yeah.
That was. So it used to be a joke. So I lived in Toronto and these girls were just recent enough graduates that they knew, we used to have great afternoon teas, and that was an open house where people dropped in, and a lot of the boys from out of town that were lonely would drop in. Yeah, there were quite a few UBC boys dropped in.
So is that when your husband?
Oh, well,
you
he was
there?
One of the amongst the ones that sort of. I don't know. I guess it just drifted.
They're
friends but it would be quite a bit boys that didn't have any local friends. Mm-hmm. They would drop in Sunday. Sunday afternoons. So, that's the beginning.
That's the beginning, that's right. And your maiden name is Dunbar?
Dunbar.
So is that any relation to Dunbar, the Dunbar area of Vancouver?
I think so. Well, my family came out here. No, I better not say too much. I had an uncle who came out about 1910 as a dentist. People were moving from the west out here. You see, the west was booming. Mm-hmm. And my father was a teacher living in London, and he persuaded my father everything was hunky-dory out here. And he came out, and he bought property on Dunbar Street. And then the bottom fell out, and everybody lost money, you know, this money. So I'm not sure about this Dunbar business. He had bought houses on Dunbar, and then, but I don't think it was named, I can't recollect that it was named after any special person, but I won't be too sure.
Yeah.